out of all the work my team does, probably 80 to 90% are gated. And that is reverse of where I would like to be. I'd rather have 80 to 90% ungated and 10% gated. When you put a gate in front of something, it really needs to be meaty and really thought-provoking. It doesn't cost people to download it in terms of money, but it costs in terms of information.
You're listening to the Content 10X podcast, where it's all about content repurposing. I'm Amy Woods, and I'm here to help you maximize your content and find smart ways to get your message in front of more of the right people, whilst also saving time. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to the Content 10X podcast. I'm your host, Amy Woods, and this podcast episode is our final episode of 2025. And we're certainly finishing up on what has been a fantastic year on the podcast on a high. This is a guest episode, and my guest is the wonderful Amy Higgins, who is Director of Content Strategy at Cloudflare. Now, Amy is an award-winning marketing leader. She is highly regarded for extensive experience building and developing top integrated marketing teams, including content, campaign, SEO, customer, community, influencer, and social. At Cloudflare, Amy leads the content and video team, producing everything from thought leadership blogs to Cloudflare TV and driving over 180 content assets per quarter. Now, Amy was a guest on our sister podcast, B2B Content Strategist. She joined me in episode 20 of season 3, and we had such a great conversation about content repurposing. So I simply had to invite her over to the Content 10X podcast to dig into that in more detail. And Amy so kindly agreed to come on. Our conversation digs into how Cloudflare approached a major proprietary research initiative. It's called the Application Innovation Report. We chat about why they conducted large-scale research in the first place and how they ensured the data was high quality and relevant. We also discuss how they maximise the content through repurposing and how cross-functional collaboration shaped the research and its outputs. Amy also shares why the team values quality and audience relevance above volume and how they measure the impact of such a major content initiative. She also provides advice to any B2B marketer planning on their own data-led report. What I love so much about this conversation is how evergreen pillar content is driving ongoing campaigns, podcast episodes, social assets, thought leadership, demand gen, and more. This is such a great conversation. So let's jump in. Amy, welcome to the Content 10X podcast. It's great to have you back.
Thanks, Amy. Glad to be here.
I say have you back. So we spoke on the other podcast that we have, the B2B Content Strategist, earlier on in the year, in the summer. And actually, Amy, funnily enough, that was episode 20 of the third season, which was the final episode of that season. I think your interview was so good, we just decided we've peaked. We can't do any better than this. We need to wrap the season up there. Let's end on a high. So that was a fantastic conversation. And in that conversation on B2B Content Strategist, we talk about quite a few different things, but we always pick up on content maximization and content repurposing amongst other things that we like to talk about. And what we briefly touched on with the repurposing that you spoke about of the Application Innovation Report is what I would love to talk to you about today, if that's okay.
Yeah, let's dive in.
Yeah. Well, for anybody who doesn't follow along to our other podcast and but needs a little bit of an introduction, would you mind just a brief summary, you know, like what you do, what your role is, where you work, etc.?
Yeah. So currently I'm the director of content over at Cloudflare. I lead a team of writers and videographers, and we do all the demand gen content and all the thought leadership content.
For a large company and a very busy team, I'm sure. So
I like to call us a teenager company. We're kind of, I don't think we're quite 5,000 people yet. So it's kind of a middle-sized company for me. And I call it a teenager because we half work as a startup and then we half work as an enterprise. And depending on the day, you know, you could lean one more to a startup and more to an enterprise way.
You can be mature and wise, but you've got the freedom to still be, you know, a bit edgy and question things and challenge things a bit as well. Like you're in the adolescence phase. I like that. That's really good. So the application innovation report is what I'd love to talk to you about. And more so, I actually just a bigger picture of maximizing and repurposing content. But when we last spoke and I was asking you about the question I asked you was around a favorite type of content that you've repurposed. And that's when we really spoke about this report. And then we were able to create these quote graphics and things like that, which was like, you know, taking a survey and turning it into 200 pieces of content, which was a soundbite that came from that episode. But to just introduce it. So I know you ran a survey, you engaged with a third party and interviewed 2,000 or so C-suite leaders, VPs, et cetera, security leaders. Firstly, what was the initial inspiration or the kind of business challenge that you were looking to resolve with commissioning this big survey, this big report?
Yeah, well, one of the main challenges was our actual data for our demand gen. So if I look specifically like at our landing pages on the website, we were converting probably 2% of those to leads. So out of all of the eBooks we do, and we probably do anywhere from 10 to 20 eBooks a quarter. It's insane.
Wow.
And very, very, very low conversion rate. Like industry standard is about 3 to 7%. And we were below industry standard. I've done these reports before, and I've seen upwards to 33% conversion. Average usually around 11 to 13% conversion. So I knew that they work for the enterprise market. I knew that they could succeed in one of the pain points that we were failing at. And so that was the impetus of it. The other side of it was not so metrics driven, but more thoughtful driven, that Cloudflare has been kind of mid-market for a while, and we're trying to hit into the enterprise market. And for the enterprise market, what really matters is the peer-to-peer. You know, what are leaders in my position doing? What are they starting with? How are they changing the status quo? And they don't want to hear from us. They want to hear from their friends, their partners, people who walk the same walk that they do and wear the same shoes. And that's really where the third-party research comes in, because you can do a broad sweep to get a global audience very, very quickly. Because the other way to do it is, you know, thought leadership interviews, podcasts, one-on-one sessions, events, but those take a lot of time to get a mass amount, where the surveys, you can get a higher quality and higher amount of respondents.
And in terms of that, so in terms of the respondents and reaching out to people and getting those survey results. So you mentioned you worked with a third party for that. So it makes sense, obviously, to do that. And then they can, that's what they specialize in, and they can reach that audience. How important is it, therefore, to work with a third party that can survey so specifically, like the audience that you know, like the roles within these types of organizations? Is that something that is always crucial in terms of deciding who to partner with on a survey like this?
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways to do a survey. You can do it yourself and survey your customers, or you can survey a third party. The reason I like third party is it's a blind survey. So the respondents don't know that it's coming from us. And when you put a name or a brand associated with it, it can skew the answers. And so we really want their honest opinion. One of the hardest choices is actually finding a third-party company that has the audience that we need. You want to get B2B. Well, we wanted to get B2B leaders and director level and above. And so making sure that they had the database that could do those interviews. And these interviews aren't like 5 minutes. They're anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes, depending on how long the survey is. And of course, the higher up you go in the titles, And the longer you go in the survey, also the more expensive it is. But in this realm, the money actually produces a higher quality. So sometimes the more money you spend, you'll get better output.
And then that makes sense even more so when you're looking that is the investment that you make in the core data in order to spin it into content that you're going to want to create the report itself, but then onto the repurposing. So you're going to want to get the maximum return from that investment, because that certainly wouldn't have been a cheap piece of work to do. So let's move on to that then. So the great quote that, you know, we pulled out in the last episode when we chatted briefly about this was, I think you said that you thought that there was around about 200 pieces of content. Can we chat a bit about that first though, in terms of what were those derivative pieces of content and what kind of formats, what kind of channels?
Yeah. Spoiler alert, one of the things that happened as we were doing the analysis of the survey is I had to cut our derivatives in half. So we went through the survey, and the first time we did it, first time we analyzed it, the data was, this isn't that compelling. And so we ended up putting kind of a leader's scope on it. So leaders in the field, what are they doing? And we classified the leaders originally with one data point. And in the end, we're classifying the leaders with, I think, 6 data points. And so when you do that, the field of respondents goes from, you know, practically 2,500 down to like 300. And that means that when we start splicing and dicing for the different regions, the different verticals, the different roles, which is where the 200 pieces come in, we couldn't splice and dice that deep anymore. Our number of respondents got limited. So I ended up cutting out, I think, we had industry reports, and the industry reports were supposed to be more thoughtful ebooks with more in-depth research, and now they're infographics. Because really across the industries, we didn't see a vast difference. And we were gonna do 15 industries. So 5 industries replicated 3 times. So North America, EMEA, and APAC. And now we're just doing the 5 infographics. So public sector, we're just doing US, because US is so specific, especially when you think about government and education. And then the other 4 industries, we're just doing a global view. So that cut out 10 reports right there. And then the other thing that we cut out is we were going to do like 2 derivative assets, one around AI and one around security and applications combined together. Well, now that is looped into the entire report. And so 2 of our major derivative assets got cut out. And the last thing that we cut out is not because of data, but actually because of bandwidth. So we were going to do 3 customer webinars, 1 per each region. And then we're going to take those customer webinars and combine them more into ebooks and derivative assets on top of that. Because of bandwidth on our team's been very, very limited, we had to cut that out. So instead, we're doing just a couple of partner interviews and customer interviews that go on our thought leadership blog.
So you have a podcast, don't you? Is some of it being turned into like content or interviews, et cetera, over on the podcast as well?
Yeah. So we had our user conference in October. So just a few months, a little 6 weeks ago from this recording. And we did the podcast and TV interviews there. So we have 3 episodes that we've already recorded. And we're actively getting the other ones recorded. Those were really, really interesting. So one of my favorite things, I'll give you a little sneak peek. So our survey was for CTOs and CIOs, really looking at their application performance and delivery, and their security across their applications. And one of the questions we asked was around the application security teams. Are they aligned? Are they siloed? Where do leaders think they are? And about 80% of our respondents said that their security and application teams are fully aligned. Well, when we did a podcast, we were prepping our customer and our host, who's one of our thought leaders, And they laughed at me. They were like, that's BS.
Oh, dear.
That way. And so it really led to an interesting conversation because we were like, why did over 2,000 people respond that this is the way it is when you guys are, you know, you're in the trenches and it's not that way? Why do you think our blind study says yes, but you're saying no? And so that led to some interesting conversations, which is, you know, a good reminder that sometimes research, people are very optimistic and positive versus honest and in the trenches of what's actually happening.
I think that's really good though, isn't it? In terms of the survey and gets all these trends and like responses and things like that. But it's always going to be the way then that other people who are in similar roles as well, but weren't in the survey would question some of it. That happens all the time, doesn't it? Just in day-to-day life where you read like the top 10 most popular this or that, and you weren't involved in the survey and you're like, well, I don't know who they asked, but they've asked me, I would have said, I wouldn't have agreed to that. And I'd have said this and things like that. And you're in that, you know, so many, you know, scuba divers say that this place is the best place. And you're like, well, if they'd asked me, I wouldn't have said that. And I think that often sparks the conversation as well, doesn't it? If you don't agree with it, it's just almost as interesting. Tell us why, and like, well, what's your view? What's your perspective? Let's talk about this. So it can still go either way in terms of the types of conversations and content that you get. I guess from the repurposing, I mean, I think it's really good what you said in terms of, and it's so refreshing and like admirable to hear that you put quality first at the top of all else. And so you looked at the data and you decided the most quality report that we can produce from this has to slim down and let's focus on that, and therefore go from 2,000 to 300. But that is great. Like, that is just putting quality at the top of all else, and that's what you did. And then, yeah, so there may have been less derivative content because of that, because of the way the angle that you took, but you're still focusing on the best content for the most relevant audience, which I think is really important. And then just from what you said, although you mentioned maybe not as many as you'd originally expected, but even what we just talked about, like, so having these podcast interviews, having discussions about the content that came from it, it's the gift that keeps on giving, because I'm sure you then turn those podcast episodes into the LinkedIn content and the social content, etc., and then the blog post, and then that blog post becomes more. So the top of the pyramid, the data, the insights, it just keeps on creating more content, doesn't it?
It's very similar to like a sourdough starter.
Yes, it is.
Sourdough starter, you get a good like meat of it, and then you can constantly feed it and add to it or change it a little bit, and it just keeps going and going.
Yeah, its presence is still there for years to come. So in terms of the planning for something like this, so we've got a big survey, the report coming up, and the derivative and repurposed content. Do you sit down in those early stages and plan the content you'll repurpose from, even to the point of when you're asking the questions, are you thinking, well, this category of questions is going to then go on to be a webinar, the answers to this are going to feed our podcast, we're going to create blog posts on the answers to that section? Is that the kind of planning that you would be doing, and at what stage?
That's exactly the type of planning. I do it at first with, so the way that we plan our surveys are thinking about the end result and then working backwards. So if we want, you know, what does the report look like? And then we build out what are the four key areas of the report. And then we dig into those questions in those four key areas. Each one of those areas is also spliced and diced further. So, you know, I'm just going to use colors. If one area is red, you know, what happens if we add a little white to it and turn it pink? What happens if we add a little gray to that pink and turn it blush? Like, how can we continually add or remove from each area to expand it? That's the best laid plan, is like, let's divide and conquer these different subject matters. And then that will lead to the questions for each one. So in order to get this hypothesis proven, what are the questions that we need to do? I had early on in my college career, I did a market research class, and I'll never forget, she's always like, start with a hypothesis. Everything goes back to the hypothesis. If what you're asking does not prove or disprove the hypothesis, then don't ask it. So having that hypothesis perception, so you have the overall survey and then perception, really helps you dial in the questions, because you have to remember the questions we're sending out to people, and it's their time. And if we're wasting their time, or they get to like the 40th question, you're going to get bland responses. So you really want to be poignant in what you ask and at what timing of the survey you ask it.
Yeah, I completely agree. The number of times I've actually invested maybe quite a bit of time in a survey, but I've got to the 40th question, then I just lose the will to live. And even though I've invested 10 minutes in it, I just stop. I just like, I'm not doing another minute. And then I think, well, it's a shame that you did get like a lot of my answers, but I can't do any more. So I'm just going to click close. And yeah, I mean, I know you were saying they were more in person, so not quite the same, but yeah, they have to be purposeful. So in terms of collaborating across departments, I'm just thinking of like product and sales and maybe like regional marketing, regional teams, localized. Are you doing a lot of collaborative discussions and meetings then to really hone in at that stage with the questions, with the hypothesis across the different areas and things like that to agree on the colors, so to speak?
Yeah. So there's certain things with certain questions where you ask it will be differentiated per industry. So there's small things like, do you refer to someone as clients or customers or patients, you know, across different industries? And so varying the survey that way, so that you have, if someone checks off a box at the beginning of the demographics that they're in this industry, then the questions are worded for that industry. So that's like at the start, is making sure that you're asking the right questions per the right vertical. The other thing that we did was actually localize the survey. So we have over 30 countries in the survey. And so localizing, so if someone's, you know, taking it in the UK, it's Queen's English. If someone's in Australia, it's Queen's English instead of American English. So little things like that can also make a big difference in the respondents rate. The outcome, we have 23 individual countries that we're focusing on in over 33 different languages. So times that by all the different reports, and you should see my spreadsheet, it's ridiculous. But all of that, making sure that the language is needed, that the country is needed, and that the regional marketing teams are actually going to do something with it. Because I don't want to just, you know, let's say, create the survey in Russian. And yet, even though we market to Russia, there might not be a marketing campaign going on at that time. So I'm like, if I'm going to produce this, you guys better use it. So there's a lot of conversations between myself and the regional campaigns teams to make sure that we're giving them what they need and not excess stuff.
And then talking about a kind of, I guess, crazy spreadsheets onto the reporting and the metrics and the measurement of it all. So I imagine it's equally similar with that. I'd love to know about that because, again, like I suppose coming back to what we were originally saying, it's a big investment just to decide to go ahead with this, and you wanting to create a lot of content from it and then ultimately get some numbers, I guess, like attribution and reach, leads, conversions, etc. All these different bits of content, as well as the report, all these different audiences. Do you have a master tracker of like trying to keep a hold of what has this report done? Like what are its numbers? How many people have reached it in different formats, different channels, etc.?
Yeah, well, we didn't have content metrics until a couple months ago. So it's taken me, I'll just give you some background. When I was doing my interview process, so 2 years ago, my boss was like, how do you look at metrics? What systems do you like? And I'm like, well, what systems are you on? And they were on Google Analytics. And I was like, well, have you transferred over to GA4? And they're like, no. And so when I came on, that's when GA4 was, you know, get on it now or forever hold your peace. We didn't get on it. So I don't have data from like 2 years ago. I have data, some of my channels, like my Cloudflare TV channel, I have data from February of this year. Something like The Net, which is a thought leadership blog, I have data from November of last year. And The Net has been around for 3 years.
Oh, really?
So looking at that historical data and setting up that benchmarks, we haven't been able to do. So like Q4, I'm focusing on, let me get my benchmarks done. You know, how many views does something get in 90 days? What percentage do we need to come from paid in order to meet our mark? That sort of thing. For this survey, the way that our teams work is we have our global team, our global demand gen team, and things are then repurposed into region, but things aren't necessarily tracked holistically. So I'm working on making sure we have a parent and child relationship in Salesforce so that the entire campaign has one reference point. And then it goes into the minutia. So the minutia of making sure all the landing pages are stated the same. You know, it's called the App Innovation Report, where if someone switches a landing page in a different region and calls it Innovation App, or they say application instead of app, then it will change the data and it makes it a lot more complicated for me to go into Adobe and find everything. So we're setting up a, here's how to set up all the data. So in my spreadsheet, I think right now it's about 150 assets with all the different localizations. It's what are the landing page nomenclature? What UTMs do you need to use? So what's the campaign code you need to use on all the UTMs? What is the different UTM channel and source metrics that you need to use and how you state it? And making that kind of a drop-down widget that everybody can use. And then I'm working with our metrics team to set up a single dashboard in Adobe that has all the main different channels, because I want to track overall traffic to the website as well as leads. So I kind of get a good full picture of how much activity is this report and all the derivatives actually driving.
Because I guess the intention of the repurposed content, it's certainly not all lead gen, is it? I know that it's a gated asset, right? Is it, you're putting, yeah, so that's more for that. But then, you know, the repurposed content, some of it's going to be more for brand awareness, isn't it, and thought leadership.
Cloudflare, I would say, out of all the work my team does, probably 80 to 90% are gated. And that is reverse of where I would like to be. I'd rather have 80 to 90% ungated and 10% gated. And so when you put a gate in front of something, it really needs to be meaty and really thought-provoking. It doesn't cost people to download it in terms of money, but it costs in terms of information. Sometimes your personal information is more valuable than the actual currency.
Well, especially to your audience, given that it's people in security, technical people, they think twice, don't they, about giving their personal data more than maybe some other people's ideal client profiles that might not think about these things as much. So, yeah. In terms of like the content that you've created then, were there any surprise wins? Like, because it sounds like you did loads of planning and you knew the different derivative content, so to speak. Was there any big surprise wins of a format or a channel where you were like, gosh, you know, I didn't even think that we'd be able to spin off content for this or in that format or anything like that?
Not really any surprise wins, because this isn't my first rodeo of doing this. Definitely some surprise wins with how my other marketers are thinking about it. So, you know, like making sure we have executive briefs. So executive briefs are not that important in the US, but it's really important for like EMEA. So having a two-page document that they can give out. We do a lot of executive briefings. And so having some bullet points for executive briefings as well as sales enablement are very important. And that's something that I think is a surprise for my team, because historically they don't do that. Historically, the content team at Cloudflare has been very much of a studio team. Someone comes to us, asks us to create this. We create it. We throw it over the wall. They use it. We never know what happens. And I've been changing that as far as how we work collectively with the campaign team, the leadership team, the field team, the field marketing team, as well as now producing our own metrics that we own and operate and review.
Yeah, I know you spoke to on the previous time that we spoke about the changes to the structure and going from being more like ticket taker type team to strategic partners running pods and having that seat at the table and more of a ownership end to end. So it certainly sounds like you've been managing to put that structure in place, but it's really starting to become part of the culture now. So it must have been nice to see with something like this, it really playing out in that way, which is really, you know, really rewarding. What advice would you give to, say, another B2B marketer, someone leading a marketing team, and they are looking to embark upon a proprietary research and report similar to this? What advice would you give in terms of what you've learned and the direction you would say to take from the start? Someone's thinking, right, I need to do this. What would be the best advice you could give to get going with that?
I think one piece of the puzzle that a lot of people get wrong is they think in the moment. They think, we have this problem right now. I want to solve this problem right now. And if you think about the right now, you won't get that much leeway over this. The best part of these type of surveys is the longevity of them, both in the longevity of the actual derivative content, but also the year-over-year progression that you can do. So really think about not just this year and next year, but the year after, and how can this migrate and morph year over year? And so a lot of times, like some of the difficulty we had in the questions was they were asking the right now questions. And I'm like, it's not the right now, it's the what happens in 5 years, or what do you need to do right now in order to do X, Y, and Z in 5 years? So really thinking that long-term, both in production of the survey as well as the analysis that you're asking.
And are there plans to make this an annual report? Yeah. So yeah, you can start
absolutely
comparing and contrasting.
We're doing two of these a year. And it's funny, we're almost back to where we started. So a year and a half ago, I was like, oh, the application report will launch in Q1. And then we're going to do a security report that launches in Q3. Well, stuff happened. Procurement took forever. Budget took forever. It's our first time doing it, so it took forever. And we were supposed to launch this application one in Q3. We're launching the application in Q1. And I was about to start fielding for our questions for the security survey to also launch in Q1. And I'm like, no, I'm pushing that out to Q3. So you kind of have to be flexible with timing and think about the implications of where the timing is with everything else you're doing.
I love it when it is something that becomes a repeatable report that comes out, and that you as the thought leaders become the company that becomes known in the industry. And if it goes down well, then people look forward to the next report coming out, don't they? And one of our clients at the moment, they've been doing something really big, like a big report for 10 years. So in January, the 10-year one's coming out. So it's really exciting, because as part of that, to make it a big celebration of 10 years of the report, we can also not just look at all the answers, but we're looking at the story of through the decade as well. What were people saying 10 years ago and 5 years ago? It's really good. And just to own that space as being the people who have been on the forefront of asking these questions and sharing these reports and then analysing through the years, it's a lot of work, isn't it? But it's well, what we were just saying, if people are going to be given data to get this information, it has to be good, doesn't it? So and all the content that you create from it as well. So
yeah, my friend Andy has been doing one at least 10 years. on bloggers, on like,
oh, Andy Crestedina.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah.
How long?
Yeah.
And I love using that not only for my own team, like there's a statement of how long does a blog take to create?
Yeah.
Well, 10 years ago, it was like 2 hours. And now it's more, you know, it takes days because it's not just the writing, but it's the research, it's the background, it's the editing, it's the optimizing. Now you add in stuff like, are we optimizing for AI search? And all of that changes. And so I love that one because when I talk to leaders and like, oh yeah, one of your writers can get this done in a day. I'm like, no, they can't.
No.
They can if we have all the research to start, but that research and the prepping takes time. And I'm able to use a third party research report from Andy and say, hey, this is what the industry leaders do. This is what they're saying. So it also helps me fight for my team and showcase to my boss, like, here's what's going on.
That's so, so interesting you mentioned that because I genuinely look forward to Andy's that report as well. Like I was saying about people look forward to it. I genuinely look forward to that. We have usually have a team meeting to discuss it. He usually comes on the podcast so I can talk it through with him as well. And I can't tell you how many times we need to change this blog post because Andy's recent report did say it needs to resemble a newsfeed and it needs to have more than it. Like we talk about it. So it's nice to think though, you achieving the same thing though, isn't it? Where the leaders, the C-suite and the VPs, the leaders in application security are saying, well, the report, the Cloudflare report said this, and this is what we should be doing, and empowering themselves in meetings to use your report to back up their business case to make a change within their team or a tool that they, whatever it is, like to be able to empower them to go ahead and make requests for resources, team, budget changes through what you've done for them. That's even more empowering, isn't it? That's what you want. Well, Amy, thank you so much. I'm best let you get back to working on all of this content and the report then, Bess and I. So thank you so much. It's been awesome. Such a good conversation. I just love to hear, you know, these stories of content being more than just a report in itself and just to be so much more. It's just so good to hear you talk about the planning and the ways that things change as well as the data comes in and everything that you've done. So thank you. It's been such a good conversation.
Of course, anytime.
I will share links to your LinkedIn and to Cloudflare, and I'll update the notes when the report's out and share a link to the report as well, so everyone can go and take a look. And also to go and if you are listening to this now and you haven't heard Amy and I talk over on B2B Content Strategist, I'll pop a link to go and listen to that conversation as well, because that was equally as good. So yes, Amy, thank you so much for coming on the Content 10X podcast. It's been great to speak.
Yeah, thanks Amy for having me.
Okay, so I hope you enjoyed that discussion and thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoy the Content 10X podcast, then why not hit that subscribe button on your podcast listening app of choice so that you can get updated when new episodes are released. And I'd really, really appreciate it if you could leave a review as well. That really makes a difference for the podcast. Also, please do get a copy of my book, Content 10X, More Content, Less Time, Maximum Results. It is the ultimate guide to repurposing every type of content, and it's available on Amazon in Kindle and paperback and also in audiobook as well. And you can head to content10x.com/book to find all the other places that you can get a copy of my book. And if you would like us to do your content repurposing for you, then we offer a fully end-to-end done-for-you content repurposing service. This is for podcasters and video content creators. We have our podcast 10x video 10x and also our specific LinkedIn 10x service, helping you to become the leading authority in your industry on LinkedIn. You can find out so much more about our services on our website. And also please do give me a follow on the social media platforms. I share lots and lots of tips and advice on social media about content repurposing. I'm at Content10X on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And if you try content10x.com/LinkedIn, you'll find my LinkedIn profile over there as well. All that's left to say is thank you so much for listening to this week's episode, and I'll catch you in the next one.